Welcome to Better Health, brought to you by the family medicine practice of Dr. Lewis Coates. Imagine having one great doctor who knows you and your family history. Dr. Coates can help follow your family's life cycle from newborns to age 100. Now it's time for Better Health. Here's your host, Scott Whatley.
Welcome to Better Health. My name is Scott Whatley, and our show is brought to you by the family medical practice of Dr. Lewis Coates, located at 5915 Murphy Road there in Sachse. Their number, 972-496-6937. Final show of 2021, but we are coming back for 2022, so we want to thank everyone that joins us. Dr. Coates, always good to have you, sir. How are you?
Thanks for having me. Enjoy doing the show.
All right. Well, we sure enjoy having you, and thank you for your time. And how was your Christmas? Better than last Christmas,
huh? Good. Oh, yeah. Doing much, much better.
Yeah, boy. The COVID was around strong right then, so glad you were doing better and your family had a good Christmas. All right, man, I wanted to just kind of talk about all that we're seeing today. I mean, now you're seeing things with quarantining only 5 days if you're asymptomatic and all that. So I guess, what are you hearing from patients? Because, boy, it seems like everywhere you go to and this conversation comes up, and I'm sure it did over the holidays, I mean, nobody really knows what to do and, you know, what they're doing with COVID, the Delta variant, Omicron, whatever. So what's just some thoughts people are expressing to you?
Yeah, I mean, right now we're seeing the Omicron spike like we talked about we would probably see a few back at Thanksgiving, and it's pretty much taken off, and it's ripping through this country like a, you know, basically like a wildfire through a dry brush patch. I mean, You know, unfortunately, this spike's going to be bigger than probably any of the spikes we've seen. There's going to be a lot more cases because it's more infectious, and the virus is now mutated, so that the vaccines are a little less effective. But the good news, and one reason people shouldn't be panicking, and we should be hopeful that this thing is mutating to a form that's less virulent. So we're seeing significantly less hospitalizations and deaths. And if you look at the, you know, where it started in South Africa, you saw a tremendous, the biggest spike they've seen in cases by far, but yet you didn't see hardly any rise in deaths at all. So Really, really good news. And you see the same thing if you look at the UK numbers. You saw a tremendous spike in cases, but yet you didn't see a tremendous rise in deaths. So, you know, now that, you know, this thing is becoming a little less virulent, and it's a combination of doctors knowing better how to treat COVID too, so we're not seeing near as many people die with this new spike, which is good. That's what we want. You know, we want the virus to become less virulent so we can all get back to doing more normal things. And I think the first step in that was getting rid of some of these antiquated guidelines that we've had for 18 months now.
Right.
You know, the first one is the sheltering in place for 10 days and, you know, quarantining yourself for 10 days when you're infected, when most of these people, the majority of people now, are having symptoms for just a few days. So the 5 days makes way more sense, you know. And we've been telling people in the office, you know, once you're asymptomatic for 24 hours, you can go back to work. And I think that's what we've got to start getting back to, is getting back to a new set of guidelines. If you feel sick, don't go to work. Stay home. Once you feel better, go back to work. You know, the chances of you shedding the virus when you're feeling good is very, very small. And that's what, you know, we've got to get away from this, hey, asymptomatic people are getting everybody sick, because that's not really true. Those asymptomatic people, they can test positive, but their viral loads are not very high, and it's very unlikely that there's a very long time that they're shedding the virus. So, you know, are they shedding some virus? Yeah, absolutely. That's why they test positive, but it's not a tremendous amount. It's not for a very significant amount of time. So shortening these quarantine periods down, getting people back to doing their thing, and then, you know, reducing some of these guidelines we have, you know, in college sports, all these bowl games are being canceled because you're testing too many kids. And unfortunately, if you start testing everybody, you're going to find a whole lot of positives in that team. If, you know, even though they're vaccinated, if somebody shows up positive and they're all in close contact with each other all the time, a lot of them will turn positive, but they're not having any, very many symptoms. And it's not deadly in that age group. So, you know, closing schools or you know, canceling games because some people are positive. We need to get away from that. We don't do that with the flu, so we shouldn't be doing that with COVID, because now in that age group, COVID is not really any more deadly and maybe less deadly than influenza. So, you know, the fatality rate, you're looking at just a few people per 100,000 in that age group. So
Right. It's,
you know, it's not something that we should be saying, hey, you know, we need to close everything down again. We need to get away from that mentality and let's start moving forward with, hey, you know what? It's not deadly in these age groups. And it makes zero sense for this mentality of, hey, let's vaccinate the kids or quarantine the kids so they don't get the parents sick. The parents have had plenty of time, or the grandparents have had plenty of time to get vaccinated now, okay? Mm-hmm. If someone didn't get vaccinated, it's likely they're not going to get vaccinated at this point, okay? You know, people have a mindset, and it, like I've said from the beginning, we shouldn't mandate the vaccines. You know, that's causing more problems than good. You know, educate, not mandate, needs to be the phrase that we should be using from higher level officials. Instead of saying, hey, we're going to mandate this, they should be coming out and educating people on why they should get the vaccine, who should get the vaccine, okay? And so, you know, if you have high risk, if you have a lot of risk factors, you're a high risk person, then yes, you should be vaccinated. And you've had plenty of time to do so. So, you know, saying that these people are putting everyone else at risk is not really true anymore. And so Right. We need to get away from that. And we say, you know what? Let's keep these kids in school. Let's keep these sporting events open. And let's keep things moving in the right direction, because we're talking about a much less virulent form now.
Absolutely. No, I 100% agree with you. Hey, we need a bumper sticker. Educate, not mandate. That's good.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea.
Absolutely.
Bumper stickers or T-shirts, but that's what we should be promoting.
Yep.
Because all you're doing now by mandating is you're making people more and more resistant to getting it. Okay, they're not listening to the facts anymore. They've made up their mind that they're not going to be told what to do. And unfortunately, you know, that's not the right way to go.
No, I agree with you. Are you surprised, or I guess should I ask you, are patients surprised that they got vaccinated and then they got either the Delta variant or the Omicron?
Yeah, we're seeing more with the Omicron than we did with the Delta variant. You saw a few with the Delta variant, but we're seeing a lot more with the Omicron. But most of them aren't having very bad symptoms at all. You know, I've talked to numerous people in the last couple of weeks that contracted COVID, and most likely they have the Omicron variant, because like I said before, when something's more infectious, it's going to, you know, basically burn out the other variants, because it's spreading much, much faster than the others, and the others don't have a host to go to, so they slowly fade out. When you get a new variant that's more infectious, it spreads rapidly, okay? Think of a fire that burns. It's like throwing gasoline on the fire on one side, and you got green grass on the other. It's going to go much, much faster on the dry grass with gasoline than it is on the green grass. So that's how viruses spread. So it's going to eventually just burn over the whole area, and that's what we're seeing. So most of these people had Omicron, and when they call in, they have very few symptoms. You know, they say, hey, I thought I had allergies, but it wasn't getting better. And I was coughing at work. I had to go, my job made me go get tested, and I'm positive. And I tell them, don't worry about it. If you're having minimal symptoms, you know, wait till you've been symptom free and then go back to work in 24 hours. You know, once you've been symptom free for 24 hours, let's get people back to work. You know, once they're completely asymptomatic, there's really no reason to be holding people out anymore.
Again, you're listening to Better Health with Dr. Lewis Coates. His office is located at 5915 Murphy Road there in Sachse. So when people are testing now, and maybe they got their home kit, whatever, they go somewhere to get tested, they test positive, they really don't know whether if it's COVID, Delta, or Omicron, right?
That's correct. And, you know, when the test just tests to see if you have the virus or not, okay, they only know the variants when a certain number of tests that come into the health department, they break them down and actually analyze them and figure out what variant it is, okay? So they can see if there's any mutations or changes in the virus. But they don't typically do that with every single test, just occasionally. So you're going to, very unlikely, you won't know what variant you actually have.
Okay. Now, I noticed in your most recent post, and by the way, if you're on Facebook, I highly recommend you follow Dr. Lewis P. Coates, and that's C-O-A-T-E-S. He puts up some good things from time to time on his site. I mean, they're all good. It's just from time to time. Let me say it that way. But you said, you know, if you get infected, get those monoclonal antibodies. Now, that's only at a hospital you can do that, right?
Well, yeah, there's different places. You have to be, you know, certain facilities can do transfusions and things. So some of those centers actually, anyone that can do IV therapy, a lot of them are doing monoclonal antibody therapy now because it's basically the same kind of thing. And they're working on, you know, they have injectables that they can use too. Some of those places have those.
Mm-hmm.
Monoclonal antibodies are a pretty proven therapy. Now, they're not as effective against the Omicron variant as they were against other variants.
Oh,
so we need to keep that in mind when we're using monoclonal antibody therapies because the virus has mutated some. So, you know, at some point we'll have to, you know, upgrade our monoclonal antibodies. You know, I'm sure they're working on that now, so they're more effective again. But they're not as effective as they were with previous variants.
Okay.
But we do have new therapeutics that are available too. So, but I do still recommend monoclonal antibodies if you can get some. They're running out. And so with the number of cases that we've had with Omicron, unfortunately, the supply of monoclonal antibodies is dwindling down very, very rapidly.
Okay. Now, this Pfizer pill just came out so for emergency use. It was just approved. So what is it and how does it work?
Well, the Pfizer pill is basically the best thing we've come up with for COVID so far by a long shot. Okay. It's the first therapeutic, you know, that consistently shown to reduce hospitalizations and deaths. You know, we're looking at 88% or 89%, depending on when you gave it. You know, when given within 3 days, it was 89%. When given within 5 days, the onset of symptoms, it was 88% effective. That's extremely good news and extremely effective medication now. For the people that are very high risk, we now have something that we can give them to dramatically reduce their chances of dying or being hospitalized with this virus. So, you know, we talked about at the beginning, we didn't want to overwhelm our hospitals. Well, these are ways you can stop that from happening. These therapeutics that are decreasing hospitalizations are things we really need to start focusing on.
Mm-hmm.
And the new Pfizer pill is called Paxlovid. And it's a pill that's designed at blocking the activity of a protease that the SARS-CoV-2 uses. And this is an enzyme that the virus uses to make copies of itself. So if you block that, you're preventing the virus from making copies of itself. And that allows your immune system now to be able to go knock out the ones that are there without them growing faster than you can make antibodies. So very, very encouraging data from the Pfizer pill. And the only bad thing about the Pfizer pill is it's extremely expensive. I'm not even sure what the cost is going to be yet, but you know, I've heard in the realms of $500 to $1,000 a pill. So who knows what that thing's going to cost at this point. You know, so, you know, unfortunately, when something's new, you know, the expense is extremely high. And so, you know, being able to get those and mass produce them will bring that cost down some. But initially, it's going to be cost prohibitive for some people. I'm sure they'll have government paying for it. But, you know, it's still extremely expensive.
Mm-hmm. And it's probably too early to know what insurance companies are going to do with that, right?
Yeah, I mean, we don't have any of that kind of information yet.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I'm just from the guessing part, knowing historically what pills are when they first hit the market, it's going to be extremely expensive. The more they produce them, you know, the laws of supplies and demand play an effect too.
Sure.
So the more they produce, the more the cost will go down.
Absolutely. And now they've got a Merck pill, right?
Yep. The Merck pill, molnupiravir, is a pill that blocks a small ribonucleoside that gets in there and incorporates into the viral RNA and subsequently messes up its ability to replicate itself by changing either guanosine or adenosine during replication. So it's putting a bunch of wrong letters basically in there when it makes copies, and eventually when enough of those things are wrong, then the virus can't replicate itself because it's replicating to a form that's not, that doesn't work anymore. Okay.
Now the
bad thing about the Merck pill was we were hoping it would be similar to the Pfizer pill, but you know, it only reduced hospitalizations and deaths about 30% when compared to placebo. So much less than the 89% that we saw with the Pfizer pill. So it's still good. I mean, that's still a very good number, okay?
Sure.
You know, I know that the media is making it out to be disappointing because the expectations were higher, but it still turned out to be, you know, that if we would have love to have something that reduced hospitalizations 30% at the very beginning. And I think that's still a very, very good pill. So, you know, you look at that number and you say, you know, if I could knock a third of these things out, that's going to make a tremendous difference down the road. So, you know, if we could go back to the very beginning and take 30% of the deaths away, look how many of that would be now.
Yeah,
okay?
For sure.
So, you know, so 30% is still good, you know. It's just disappointing compared to what they were hoping. When they saw the Pfizer numbers at, you know, 89 and 88%, you're hoping that this would be something similar to that. And there's also another pill. You know, once again, this is a drug that we've had for a long, long time, and we're repurposing it. But it's a drug called fluvoxamine. And fluvoxamine is a very, very old antidepressant in a class called the SSRI, Selective Serotonin Reuptake Inhibitor. And what this means is it's used for depression. It gets in the synapses and it prevents the reuptake of serotonin. But we also believe that this fluvoxamine has some important anti-inflammatory properties, which helps prevent the cytokine storm that we've talked about so much on this
right.
show.
Right, okay.
So, you know, it works on a receptor, we think that that unlocks what we call the sigma 1 receptor, which has a significant role in controlling inflammation. So we also know that fluvoxamine is believed to increase melatonin, which we've talked about on this show, mm-hmm. being helpful in the potentially helpful in the treatment of COVID. So there was a recent study in The Lancet where they took about 1,500 people and treated either, you know, cut them pretty close to half and half, half in the treatment group, half in the placebo group, and it showed that it could reduce hospitalizations and deaths by about 30%. So that's very, very good news. And there's
sure.
a drug that you can get for about $10. Okay.
Oh wow. Okay.
So it's a drug that's been around a long time, very few side effects. So, you know, it's something that we have an option of using now too. And I've been using a lot of that over the last 2 or 3 months, and, it seems to be very effective. And like I said, the side effect profile is very minimal with that drug. Also, as long as you're not on another antidepressant that could cause too much serotonin in your body, that, this is one that you can use also. So we now have some therapeutics which are double-blind, placebo trial proven. You know, that was a big thing at the beginning. Everybody wanted to make sure things were, you know, waiting on these long-term trials that take a while. Well, we now have three proven therapeutics that we can use. So for people that catch COVID and have high risk factors, mm-hmm. or people mm-hmm. that aren't vaccinated, you know, we've made such a big deal out of the you know, who's getting vaccinated, who's not. Well, now there's therapeutics in place for those that choose not to get the vaccine.
Okay.
And I want to, and you know, the other thing to bring up is when people are shaming all these people that don't get vaccinated, you don't know what their reasonings are. Okay.
Sure.
And you know, there's certain people out there that have autoimmune diseases and clotting diseases that can't mm-hmm. get vaccinated. And so, you know, that it's unfortunate that we've created this system where we're, you know, trying to shame people for their views, and that's not what we should be doing. Like I said at the beginning, educate, don't mandate.
Right. Again, you're listening to Better Health. Dr. Lewis Coates is our guest. Their number, 972-496-6937. So do you recommend, if someone tests positive and they go to a doctor, you like an antibiotic to be given to them to help fight this?
that's very debatable. I mean, you know, I don't know that you have to have an antibiotic, okay? It's not helping the virus at all. You know, there's some belief that Zithromax has some anti-inflammatory properties. It was used in heart disease for a while even. Mm-hmm. But that's minimal. You know, the antibiotic that a lot of people use is to prevent secondary infections, which, you know, does happen with viral infections. When your body's busy fighting one infection, and it's all of your immune system is being used up to fight the virus, there's a chance that an opportunistic bacterial infection could come in. And that's why a lot of doctors use antibiotics with the treatment of COVID, is to prevent them from getting a secondary pneumonia or something like that while they're being treated for COVID.
Okay. All right. Needless to say, four-letter word that's been through all this is mask. You know, it kind of cracks me up when I'm driving down the road here, you know, and you see somebody in a car by themselves wearing a mask, or they're walking down the street, nobody around them, and they're wearing a mask. Who should really be wearing a mask, and where are you at in your thought process for masks?
Well, masks have been so controversial from the beginning. And, you know, the big question is that people, you have half the people that believe masks work and half the people that believe they don't work. And the problem is the government, you know, made flip-flop back and forth on this thing from the get-go, and that made everybody have reservations about masks. Do masks decrease the incidence of COVID? Absolutely, okay? You know, there's plenty of data showing that. And the problem is, for instance, in studies with surgical masks, the reduction, if you wear a surgical mask, you're only reducing your chances of catching COVID by 30%. That means 7 out of 10 in that room that are wearing a mask are still going to get infected. Okay. So, you know, it's not 100%, which is what people are, everyone wants all or nothing. And it's never that way in medicine. And that's what the public's finally learning. There is no all or nothing in medicine. There's a lot of gray area. And so with masks, you've got a 30% reduction. If you wear a mask and you go into a grocery store, you're decreasing your chances of catching COVID by approximately 30%. Now, if your husband has COVID and you put a mask on him, because when you go in to see him, you're reducing your chances of catching COVID by about 60%, okay?
Okay.
So, you know, it's a lot better when you have a mask on the infected individual than the non-infected individual. And then if you go to cloth mask, you're only getting a 10% reduction in COVID, which is, you know, most people wear cloth masks, to be mm-hmm. honest. You look around, very few people are using the surgical mask. They're using cloth mask, okay? If you really want to decrease your chances, you have to use an N95 mask, okay? And, you know, there's not a lot of those around, and people don't use those because they're uncomfortable and it's hard to breathe, and, you know, everybody complains if they have them on because they have to be tight where they fit your face. So the N95 mask is truly the way you want to go if you really want it, if you're really, really nervous about it. Now, what's better than a mask is barriers and distance. You know, if you just sit 5 feet away from people, you know, your chances of catching COVID are very, very small. Okay.
Okay.
You know, so, you know, keeping distance between you or the plastic barriers that you see everybody put up are much, much more effective than masks. Okay.
Right.
So, you know, if you're really nervous, sit 10 foot away or, you know, from somebody, and you don't have much to worry about. You know, mm-hmm. very few particles are going that far in the air across to somebody. So putting distance between you and somebody is much more effective than mask, you know, or if you're really concerned.
Right. Now, how often should people change those masks? Because that's what I see people, you know, throwing them up on their dash and just putting them on and using them for a month. I mean, how often should you change a mask then?
Yeah, you should be changing it all the time. That's the problem. And, I mean, you know, if you're, you know, that's why the effectiveness of masks, the numbers that I'm talking about are in clinical trials, okay, where people are cleaning their masks, sanitizing their masks, and using new masks. You know, in the real world populations, the numbers are going to be even lower.
Okay? Sure.
Because you're having exactly that. You're going to have a mask that's been used for 3 months, okay? You know, and how effective is that mask now? Not very effective. And it gets contaminated with other bacteria and other viruses because it's sitting around. And, you know, unless you're cleaning it with the blue light all the time, you know, unfortunately, it's not going to to be very effective way. You know, the mask mandates hopefully at some point will start to fade away as the virus becomes less and less virulent. Areas can start to relax some of those restrictions. But unfortunately, you know, my clinic's in Dallas County. We still have a mask mandate, you know, for businesses. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, just respect the place's, requirements
sure.
and move on. Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, let's spend our last couple of minutes here because, boy, everybody I've talked to since I met you and I bring up vitamin D, I said, man, make sure your vitamin D's up. And they're like, I've never had that checked. So just take a couple of minutes here and just talk about that importance of vitamin D through all this.
Yeah, vitamin D is, I think, very, very important. And, you know, I said that 18 months ago. It's one of the first things I wrote about was, hey, we need to start working on vitamin D. Vitamin D plays a big role in your immune system, and you know, getting that level up over 55, you know, somewhere between 55 and 80 is ideal. You know, 55 and 100 is fine, but you know, taking vitamin D, getting out in the sun, focusing on your health and getting your weight down and exercise, you know, all these things are important. You know, I think those things are more important than any of the mask mandates or, you know, drugs we're talking about, the therapeutics, you know, the vaccines, all these things take a second role to just getting your health in order. Okay.
Yeah.
If you're taking the vitamins and supplements and you're in good health and your weight's good and you're not, and your blood sugars and blood pressure are all good, your risk becomes very, very small.
Right. Absolutely. Well, Dr. Coates, man, we thank you for your time so much. And, boy, I love these shows, and we look forward to 2022. Probably going to be an interesting health year along with it. Well, when I look back at all you've been through as a physician and all the changes and different ways of treating things, I mean, this has been an evolving thing, not month by month, but almost day to day, hasn't it?
Yeah, when it first started, it was definitely day to day. And, you know, luckily the information is slowing down now where we can, as physicians, have somewhat of a normal life again. But at first it was pretty much, you know, you spent all day seeing people and all night reading journals and articles and, you know, studying information. It was felt like being back in med school almost.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, hey, we appreciate it. And like I say, we look forward to 2022 with you. And thank you so much for your time.
All right. Good to see you. And we'll see you next week.
All right. That is Dr. Lewis Coates. You've been listening to Better Health. His practice is located 5915 Murphy Road there in Sachse, the number 972-496-6937. And hey, if you don't have a good doctor and you're in that Garland, Sachse, Dallas area, highly recommend Dr. Coates. Again, follow his Facebook page, Dr. Lewis P. Coates. That's C-O-A-T-E-S. For Dr. Coates, my name is Scott Whatley. Thank you for listening to Better Health, and I hope you have a great day.
You've been listening to Better Health with Dr. Lewis Coates. Dr. Coates' office is located at 5915 Murphy Road in Sachse. Give him a call today, 972-496-6937. And be sure to tune in next week for more of Better Health with Dr. Lewis Coates.